Live from Fort Bragg's backyard, this is the show that put the 110 Nation on the map. There is only one nation, the 110 Nation, and you're listening to the 110 Nation Sports Show. Covering each and every sport across the board, there is no sport too large or too little. It's time to talk the talk. Here we go. Here's the man, the founder, and your host, Mr. CJ Sports.
I want to welcome everybody to the 110 Nation Sports Show. I am your host, Mr. CJ Sports. You can follow me at CJ Sports 1. Follow the 110 Nation at 110 Nation. Check us out on Facebook, my personal fan page, Mr. CJ Sports, the 110 Nation fan page, 110 Nation Sports. Also, you want to know?
Okay. Keep talking.
Check out our site, www.
There you go. Seconds and then you go out again. I don't know what.
Okay,
you're okay now, but I okay. Go ahead.
Okay, so we've had a whole.
Nope. Something's happening. I don't know what, but
let's try that. How's that work?
That's it. Right there. Yeah.
Back on the speakerphone. We've had quite a bit of a crowd in the studio this week. Kayla Lyons as well last night. What better way than to wrap up the week and then two more great guests? Is we got Christian X of Venturini Motorsports, and we've got Cole Anderson joining us tonight. I'm looking forward to having these great guests on. I believe Christian is a returning guest, if I'm not mistaken. And
we had Christian before. I remember.
Yeah. So I thought so. And got Cole for the first time, so looking forward to meeting another great athlete and another up-and-rising star in the racing world. So looking forward to that. Before we jump into all that, first of all, I got to make sure that I thank Fit for Life. You guys can find them on Facebook, Fit for Life. You can also go to our site, www.110nationsports.com. Right-hand side, click that pretty little banner, find a location near you, 24/7, 365. Get your gym on, clean facility, courtesy staff, everything you could possibly need or want that is Fit for Life. I also got to thank the I-95 Sports Network and Mile High Radio for rebroadcast or syndicating our shows. Without these great marketing partners and or networks, we wouldn't be able to do what we do and grow the way we grow. So I want to make sure that I thank all of them for making this possible. Mike, why don't you let them know what you got going on Friday nights, where you can be found, liked, and all the whatnots, and let's jump into this.
Okay. Well, today I got nice two leads on some Stafford people. So we're going to have a Stafford evening on Friday night. Number one, I woke up. When I checked my computer this morning, I saw somebody that wanted to get in touch with me, and it was the Stafford Track Photographer. So I'll have him on, I hope to connect with him over the next day or two, because I sent him a message that I would like him to be on. And also another of the SK drivers that will stand to benefit from Kevin Harvick's generosity. So we'll talk to him about his season, veteran driver Tom Bowles. So those are the two. We'll have two good Stafford guests. And like I say, I want to get as many of those gentlemen on as possible before their season starts with the Spring Sizzler in April, because then they will be running live on Friday nights. That's their night to race, and they won't be talking to us on a phone. They'll be strapped into a race car. So those are the two people we'll have on Friday night. And you can find me on my personal Facebook page, the 110 Nation pages, the Hot Laps with Stats pages, the website, and my Twitter account, which is @Stats108.
Lord have mercy. Yesterday, I'm driving up I-95, heading back to the great state of North Carolina, and doing the show on the road. And today, here I'm pulling another 20-hour shift, fresh off vacation. I'm doing this show straight from the location of work, 801 North Main Street, Spring Lake, North Carolina. If you're in the vicinity, all you got to do is stop in. Let me know that you're listening to the show, and I'll hook you up with a free Polar Pop to quench that thirst while you're listening into the show tonight. Got a lot of things that I'm sure that we need to jump into tonight, Mike. Just trying to recover from the long drive. I think I finally got in, and I think I finally got in around midnight or so when it was all said and done. Long night, early morning. Got a lot of things that it was a hectic day today. It was planners, so the store, the specials and the signs had to change today. Truck order, trying to play catch up all by myself. If I'd have known everything was had to be done today, I wouldn't have scheduled myself to be alone today. So it's been a crazy afternoon, but a lot of talk. And I know you're real big in the golf world, Mike. A lot of talk about Tiger Woods. It seems like every time that I turn anything on, there's a lot of hype about this weekend or this upcoming major anyway. With Tiger Woods, Mike, I've heard a few people talk about the hype usually kills it, and we've hyped. Well, I'm not gonna say we, but the whole Tiger Woods thing has been hyped quite a few times over the last few years. But I have this feeling, Mike. Let me know if I'm wrong. But I have this feeling from what we've seen in previous tournaments and what the reports have been from what people have seen him practicing and everything, that this is not just an unnecessary hype, that what we're seeing, I'm not going to say the old Tiger Woods, but we're seeing a lot of resemblance, a lot more resemblance than we had in a very long time of the old Tiger Woods. Is it safe, Mike, for us to start getting excited and thinking that at least maybe for this season, or even maybe at least for this major, that Tiger is back?
I think so. I think so. I really do. It's interesting. For the little starts and stops he had for the last 2 years, I would have questioned it a little bit. But now, the first time I said, okay, he at least, you know, I think the first tournament that he was within the top 10, I think he had finished 7th, and he was like competitive all weekend. And then I said, okay, that's one, but let's wait and see. But everybody since then has said, even in practice rounds, I read something this week that I posted early, I guess it was Monday, that Fred Couples played a practice round with him. And he said he was hitting the ball like he had never seen Tiger hit the ball. And I think it was basically the difference, CJ, I think, is health. When I say that, I mean, yes, he went through the operations and the back and everything. But I think it's still post-surgery, it was still bothering him, you know. And then he came on this year, and pretty much from the start, he didn't really play. I think he missed one cut early, like in November and December, that stretch. And then once January came around, he started to really hit the ball well. He finished seventh in one tournament. I remember another one I wrote about. I wrote right about them all eventually. But he also finished second in one, and I said, okay, he might be back. And now, especially the Masters, especially this week, I've said this along, CJ, that there's two tournaments in golf that if you don't follow golf at all, there's two that you generally will look into at least on a Sunday to see who won. And that's the Masters and the U.S. Open, those two. And especially on Masters Week, if you got the combination of the Masters and Tiger, there's going to be a lot of happy network television network executives, let me tell you.
Well, I'm not going to say for the network's sakes, but for the fans' sake, I know this is something that especially golf fans have been waiting, and more specifically even Tiger fans have been waiting for quite a few years in hopes and to even get a glimpse of the old Tiger. I've been very vocal. I'm not by any stretch of the imagination a golf fan. I have a guy who comes in every day and plays lottery and is a big time golfer, golfs probably 3-4 times a week. I'm working on getting it situated where I can go golf with him. I want to go. I've heard that it is one of the funnest things to go do. Mentally, it's a mental thing and it might drain you mentally, but physically and entertainment wise, I heard it's a blast. And I at least want to give it one opportunity. But sitting there watching golf, no, I have, and there's like a handful of sports. I don't have that in me to sit there. Just like there's a lot of people who don't have it in them to watch NASCAR. I just don't. Golf is one of those sports. I just don't have it in me. But I would really like to be able to sit here and over the next week or two be able to talk about what we witnessed with Tiger Woods in this major. And I know what it means to the sport. I know what it means to the fans. I know what it means financially for the sport. The marketing partners and those, Nike and everything else that's involved with Tiger Woods, and what it means to the PGA to have that revenue because of Tiger Woods, not just being there, but actually being there all weekend long and being competitive and the eyes and the ratings. And I can imagine what, especially all the hype and Freddie Couples coming out and saying what he said, I can imagine what the ratings are going to be for this event. I'd be willing to bet it's going to be one of the higher rated tournaments majors anyway, that the PGA's had in quite a while. And I hope that for that, I hope that Tiger Woods, even if he doesn't win, I would hope that he's in the top three, top five, and is close competitively. And that way, everybody's tuned in until the very end of the tournament and gives us hope that come the rest of the season, we might see Tiger running for the top spot.
Right. And I really feel that he's going to be okay for this week anyway. And it's interesting because, like I said, even without Tiger, if it was just the Masters, there'd be more people, in my view, watching it. And just to back up what you said about something else, and I learned this about golf very early. Now, I watch golf. I can't say I watch every hole every day. But I watch golf as a reporter and can write about it because I've reported on it since college for the first time. And I look at scores and everything else. And the thing about it is that what you said is very, very true. You have to do it. I learned that from people early on. When I was in high school, I had a coach. One of the coaches that I kept stats for, which was the origin of my nickname, said to me, you know, I used to kid him, like, well, what's so tough about hitting the little ball in the little hole, you know? And he used to say, well, you know, you try it once in a while. I wish you could stand up and try it, you know. But it's one of those sports, CJ, that you have to participate in to watch on TV. And I could say the same thing, and I physically bowled. Bowling was another thing. When bowling was on in the 60s and the 70s on TV, on ABC television, that was another sport where people said, okay, I'll watch the pros do it because I do it. You know, and that was like the heyday of people going into bowling alleys. I'm not sure there are too many around nowadays, very few people. I know our colleague Craig Moore, his son, is a high school bowler. But bowling was another one of those sports where you just couldn't watch it on TV and know what was going on. You had to participate to know what the deal was. You know, everybody knows that a strike is 10 pins and everything else. But in terms of the scoring, in terms of everything happening, that's another sport where you really have to participate. Very, very rarely can you sit through a bowling match, you know, on TV. But golf is definitely one of those sports. There's no drama like in other sports. The drama might be like, will he make this putt? Will he make this long shot? Will he get out of the sand trap or whatever, that kind of drama, but not the drama we usually associate with sports. But I really think, you know, you'll enjoy it once you play the game. That's the difference.
Yeah, and I'm a big bowling fan. I love to bowl. I've bowled in leagues. I'm a really, really good bowler, but I couldn't imagine sitting here watching a bowling tournament. I don't think that it would hold my attention very, very long at all.
Well, I remember it was on for quite a while on Saturday afternoons in the wintertime, but that's because people didn't have anything else to do, I suppose. And in the wintertime up north, if you were stuck in the house, maybe you're not like into, I don't know, whatever else was on Saturday, you know, this type of sport. Maybe if you were a woman, I'm not trying to be sexist here, but maybe you watched bowling over some other sport that you didn't necessarily like. But it was it was on for quite a number of years. But yeah, that's another sport that's in the same vein. You don't always just watch that sport on television. Interesting football stories today, CJ. We got a lot to catch up on because we haven't really talked all around the sports world since Monday. But interesting. I don't know. You know, they're going to be an interesting team to watch. They might implode before they get out of the locker room, but they're going to be an interesting team to watch. The Rams, CJ, picked up another wide receiver from the New England Patriots, Brandon Cooks, and they were talking about the article. I put it up. It was an SI article by my favorite, your not so favorite, Peter King. But anyways, he was talking about the fact that the Rams did themselves a favor in both ways. He feels that Brandon Cooks is a better wide receiver, and they took Odell Beckham off the table. You know, and Odell Beckham, we said, would probably be a bad mix, especially with Sue there. You know, they'd have two head cases to contend with. And so, you know, his feeling was, by signing Cooks, they got a very good receiver that has been, you know, obviously on a championship team, with New England, the best team to learn from in that respect. And you know, so signing him, they're going to be an interesting team to watch with the additions they made.
They are. You know, they were an interesting team last year. They caught a lot of people off guard. A lot of people weren't expecting them to have the season that they had. You know, unfortunately for them, that run ended in the playoffs, and it wasn't because they weren't a good team. I predicted them to lose in that first round, and it was more to do with, and really the only thing to do with, was the fact that they had a lack of experience. You had Todd Gurley was, what, his second season. You had your quarterback was, what, rookie or second season. So you had a very young, inexperienced team that didn't have that playoff experience going against, you know, playoff experienced teams. Now they got that one underneath their belt, and, you know, even with a loss, you got that experience. You got the butterflies out of the way. You know what it's like to be on the stage and play at the playoffs. I think this year is something to build on. I don't know if I necessarily feel that they are going to go to NFC Championship. You know, you got a lot to prove, especially Philadelphia being over there in the NFC. But I think that with the continued building of this team, we're going to at least see them have a first round or their first game, first win as the LA Rams. I don't think that there'll be a one and done situation. I'm ready to commit to them to being in the playoffs. And, you know, we got a draft and a lot of things to play into, being the NFC Championship game. We got a draft and we got, you know, free agency and a lot of things to play into factor. And of course a season ago, but, I like what this team has done. You know, they showed us a lot last year, and if they can build off that, and which I think they will, you know, I think they win at least one playoff game this year, and I wouldn't be surprised as long as they continue, you know, the blueprint that they got, that we don't talk about possible Super Bowl appearance here in the next few years.
Right, right. And on the other side of the coin, I don't know if you saw this one, CJ, but I put it up about 3 o'clock because it was late breaking. And I happened to be over on ESPN page checking something out. And across my little, the notations there, comes the notation. RG3 is a Raven. So I guess that's kind of a push. You early on, you had the possibility of Colin Kaepernick backing up Joe Flacco, and now you have RG3. So, to me, that's a push with the two of them because they're basically the same quarterback as far as contributions. I don't know if you had experience with him as a Brown, but it's either injury or disruption of some sort. So to me, those two are kind of push. Now it'd be interesting to see if he plays at all, backing up Flacco, and you know what happens with Flacco. To me, they got to hope that Flacco stays healthy for 16 games or more if they make the playoffs. Because I don't know if I would put RG3 in control of my destiny should my number one quarterback go down.
I'm not big on the move. I was not big on the move when the Cleveland Browns got RG3. He can't stay healthy. I'm not quite understanding why teams continuously sign. To me, it's like Sam Bradford. Why do teams keep signing these quarterbacks that don't stay healthy? And my other issue with RG3 going to the Baltimore Ravens is the play style. You're bringing in a backup quarterback, and that's why another reason why I didn't feel Colin Kaepernick was a good fit in Baltimore. And RG3 is in the same boat. Where they're a much more mobile quarterback, they rely on their legs more than they do their arm. And that is entirely different from, I mean, Flacco can scramble and Flacco can run. He's a little bit mobile, but he's a gunslinger. He's going to throw that ball first. He's not looking to run. RG3 and quarterbacks like RG3 and Kaepernick, Cam Newton, they're looking, you know, if they can run, they're going to run. They're kind of more of a run-first natured quarterback. And so when you have a quarterback that is not a resemblance of your starting quarterback, now you're looking at two different game plans. You're looking at two different play calling. You're looking at your offense having to be prepared for really two different types of quarterback. I don't understand why teams go after quarterbacks that do not resemble or have similar play styles as their starting quarterback, first of all. Then you throw in the fact that this player stays injured, so you already know that you got to have a pretty solid. In other words, you're going to have to spend a little bit more money into your third string quarterback than you normally would, because you can't rely on your backup to be there. So that, you know, kind of tightens the salary cap and what you can spend, because you forked over money on a quarterback that you can't rely on to be there from week to week if you need him. So outside of it being a really different play style quarterback, the injuries, you throw that in there, and then it really has me scratching my head why or what Baltimore was thinking.
Right. It's very interesting, CJ. And a couple of basketball stories. Kind of interesting. This was kind of interesting. And you following the Cavaliers and LeBron, like you do, I was wondering if you knew anything about this.
Apparently, get him.
LeBron and somebody else started a kind of like a podcast, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That was supposed to be situated. It was supposed to be like the backdrop, I guess, was a barbershop, like the old time.
Mm-hmm.
Barbershops, and I know about these because my grandfather ran one. He had one in his house, actually, that he built off his house. And, you know, the guys would sit around and talk and everything else and have haircuts and do whatever. Well, LeBron had one, and then Nick Saban had one also. And actually what happened is LeBron and his partner ended up getting into legal situations with Saban, saying that he stole their idea. And Saban came back today and said, I put the story up, and said that he didn't know that LeBron and his partner had started this or had built it around the barbershop motif or whatever, but that he is still going to continue to have the show. So that might be something interesting if this all blows up, and God knows where this is going, I guess.
Well, in a little bit more than just a similar show, what some kind of resemblance of the logo or name of the show or something?
Some kind of copyright, yeah, like something that's been trademarked. I think that was the problem. Neither of them trademarked the logo. If they had trademarked it, then that's one thing. But just the use of the terminology, maybe. I mean, it was a whole mess. It was basically a whole mess. I don't understand why you just can't have a, you know, maybe it's a cute idea and everything else, but you could just have a podcast and not necessarily, you know, it's frankly like we do, CJ, just talking sports. You don't have to say mm-hmm. you're sitting in a bar shop or whatever the case may be. I don't know what they did. Maybe they do it visually too. Who knows? You know, at this point, we don't, except for the, you know. But maybe that's it. Maybe that they have a backdrop instead of like an office or you know, you could see them in your house sort of deal. Maybe they have like a bar, who knows, like a barber pole. I don't know what, you know, what constitutes it having the same type of venue, but that's that. It strikes me that it's one of those trademark copyright type of deals.
It makes you wonder if any of it has to do with the Ohio State Pride and with LeBron James. I'm assuming he's like any other Ohio State fan is not a fan of Alabama. And I wonder if that rivalry plays any factor into this conflict.
Yes, definitely.
Get him, LeBron. Get him.
Also in basketball, two interesting things, CJ, and I didn't realize till the very end when I read the article how close the 76ers are to not the playoffs. I know they've been better this year. Their youth is starting to mature. But the interesting thing here is Joel Embiid, their main draftee from a few years ago, out of Kansas, I believe, if memory serves me correctly, got hurt, and they're saying that maybe that could alter the playoffs. Now, hopefully he's not hurt that seriously. Maybe he'll be back, you know, either before the playoffs or right after it starts, they start. But they're really talking about his injury impacting the 76ers in the playoffs. And the other interesting, I'll give you two to comment on at once. The other interesting one from earlier this week was, I think his name is Hassan Whiteside, the center for the Miami Heat, got disciplined by the team. Once again, it's one of those social media things. He came out in the social media and said something that the team didn't like, and he ends up. But it was about his role in on the team. He didn't think he was playing enough or something of that nature, and the team disciplined him. So another instance, we've talked about it in the past. You know, athletes and social media at times, they don't know. You know, you have your people that are mature, and we've had most of them on the show, Natalie, and that know what they're doing at a young age and mature enough to use social media in the right way. And then you have these so-called professionals that basically put their foot in their mouth every time they post something, CJ.
With the Joel Embiid, I know part of what's kept him out is passing the concussion protocol. I know that, you know, he was banged up pretty bad, and then I know there was an injury. Yes, it's going to play a factor into the playoffs. This could, depending on how long he is out, could alter, you know, how the playoffs are played. One, how they're played, but the outcome of it. I know that even without him, the 76ers won their 11th straight, I think, last night or the night before. So I know that they're still playing very good basketball even without him. It is going to be interesting because, you know, there's a lot of what ifs if he is out there on the court. I don't think there's nobody out there that says, okay, they're going to get past the Cavaliers. And I think to this point, everybody still has Cavaliers as the team coming out of the East. And there's even some people talking about that the Cleveland has a shot because they feel that between OKC, Houston, and Golden State is not going to get that clear-cut path of four wins, and be done. Last year, they didn't lose a game until, you know, Cleveland beat them in the finals, and I think they beat them once, maybe twice. They had an easy path and a relaxed path all the way through and got a lot of rest. A lot of experts are not, and to include myself, I don't think it's going to be that easy for Cleveland. I think Houston is going to be one really one really difficult obstacle for the Golden State Warriors. And there's a lot of people thinking that the West is going to beat each other up enough that The East might have a legitimate shot. Cleveland might have a legitimate shot. So it is going to be interesting to see when he returns and if he returns in time to help the 76ers and see how far they can go. When it comes to the Whiteside thing, it's tough to be a center in the league right now because the way this league has shifted, and we watched this with Villanova, where this league has shifted and basketball has shifted, period, to these outside shooters, three-point shooters. Where, you know, this is not a league that once upon a time that Shaquille O'Neal dominated, Hakeem Olajuwon dominated, David Robinson dominated, Tim Duncan. This is not a league of the big man anymore. This is a league of your shooters, your Kyle Korvers, your Steph Currys, your James Hardens, your Westbrooks, not the big guys. And so being a big guy is not necessarily a big deal or a necessity. And when you got teams getting up and down the court, and really it don't matter how good shape you are, when you're 6'7", 6'11", 7 foot tall, you wear it down a lot easier than these shorts, faster, small guys. And you're only hurting the momentum, the pace, of one, keeping up with the other team, but two, trying to match that pace. Whiteside's got to understand, regardless how good of a player he is, unless he can play the five spot like Kevin Love does, where Kevin Love is an excellent outside shooter, excellent rebounder, and yes, can, you know, score some points in the paint. This is why Tristan Thompson, I mean, we're talking 2-3 years ago, he was one of the best centers in the league and was killing the rebounds. Might not score a lot, but he cleaned and helped Cleveland win a championship. Here we 2 years removed, and Tristan Thompson's coming off the bench. Whiteside, one, has got to understand that this league is a different league from even when he entered the league, and he's going to have to ride this wave either, you know, the rest of his career or until this league gets past this whole – three-point shooting phenom that they're running through right now. And also, he's going to have to learn, just like every other player, you can't go to social media. You can't air out your dirty laundry. Pat Riley in that organization is not going to tolerate players, you know, showing any form of disrespect or you know, putting their business like that out there and making the organization look bad. And that, you know, rightfully so, he got in trouble for it. And, you know, that's why any movie you watch now, and even Draft Day, you know, you watch Kevin Costner on Draft Day, for the love of God, stay off social media. And this is why, you know, even in the movies they stress this, because social media is ruining so many careers. We just talked about the young player from Villanova that tweeted something out when he was 14. I don't think it's going to ruin him. I think it's really BS that within the first 24 hours, someone was digging into his Twitter feed from, you know, when he was 14. I could care less what he said he was 14. Now, if he was 18, maybe a little bit more weight into it. Or if this season he, you know, says something, maybe hold some weight to it. But you're talking a kid. Kids say the darndest things. I'm blown away every day at work when, you know, some of the stuff that comes out of kids' mouths, if it's, you know, disrespectful, if it's funny, if it's off the wall, whatever the case may be. And 14 years old, simply that's what he was a kid. But you got to learn to stay on social media regardless. And like I said, Whiteside's going to have to ride. I mean, he's an excellent center. He's a great player. And if he wants more time, what's going to have to happen is he's going to have to get himself in his cardio better so he can get up down the court faster. But he also going to have to work on shooting outside. He's going to have to become a better outside shooter, a mid-range shooter to outside range. You can't just, you know, be a great guy in the paint, getting a lot of rebounds and making, you know, scoring a lot of points near the rim. He's got to do the same thing Kevin Love has done and really expand his shooting range in order to be a vital piece of that score, offense.
Right, and the interesting thing, I'll just follow up on something I saw today. I don't know, I guess I caught it later because I caught a video of it. It wasn't on TV that I caught it. But I don't know if you saw this first take. Stephen Smith commented and said it was really BS that they, you know, they lambasted this kid for something when he was 14, and you take, you know, what's supposed to be the one of the prouder nights in his life, watching his team just, you know, when they won the national championship, and he was like the star, and we already made the point that prior to that he was coming off the bench, and really not in the starting five or used to the publicity, and all of a sudden they want to kill this kid. You know, this guy for what he did when he was a kid. And again, both of us are not excusing the comment or, you know, the derogatory term he used. But still in all, like, went out, he was a kid. And Stephen Smith even said, which doesn't make it gospel, but the point was, even the ESPN and other professionals were saying the same thing we said, like, okay, you know, it was a terrible mistake on his part, but he was 14 at the time, you know. And, you know, it just backs up everything that we said, basically.
Back to Whiteside, I don't understand, especially a veteran player in any sport, why they think going to social media and airing out anything is going to turn out with positive results. I don't get it. I understand you're frustrated. I understand that you feel that you should have more play time. I understand that you feel that your value is going down because you're not getting the play time, you're not getting the numbers. I understand all that. But when you have players that accept their roles and make the most of it, those players tend to get rewarded much better than those that get on social media and bicker about what their role is. And like I said, I understand the league was different when Whiteside came in, and it's not been that long. I mean, you're talking only three to five year stretch. Yeah. This has all just changed. And I understand that you join the league and you're expecting and thinking that, you know, you're going to be this big center. You're going to dominate the league. Life is going to be great. Championships, big contracts. I understand all this. And I understand that you have this whole new wave of basketball come in, and it kind of cut the legs from underneath you, and you're not getting the play time that you expected. Now you're not accomplishing what you wanted and the goals you set. And I understand that now the contracts are not going to be as lucrative as you were hoping they were going to be. But you got to understand that you got to ride the trends. If you don't ride the trends, then you get left behind. You know, just like college football, all of a sudden you have this play option football. And that became the trend of the end of college football. And if you didn't adapt to it, and you didn't form your offense to be around this play action football, or pass option football, then you got left behind. You weren't going to a national title. And then it got played out. And Ohio State didn't adjust. Ohio State didn't adjust to the new wave of how to play the game, and they got stuck on that whole read option football. And look where it got JT Barrett and the Ohio State Buckeyes last year. They got them on the outside looking in. They got manhandled by Iowa. They lost to Oklahoma. So I understand the frustrations of Whiteside, and you know, rightfully so. You know, you thought that you were going to be into this role. You thought that, you know, this is, you know, what was to be expected. You were ready to play to what was expected. But as the league changed, what is to be expected in the style of basketball is also going to change. And like I said, either you ride that wave and make the best of it and perform, you know, at the highest level when the opportunity calls and you get out there, There's going to be games that, yes, Whiteside is going to be more valuable. When you're out there and Embiid's playing, then, yes, all the bickering and the lack of play time, I tell you what, when you're out there and you're playing against Embiid or you're playing against Kevin Love or you're playing against some of these other big men of the league, you better put on a show like you've never put on before, because you can't sit there and bicker and cry that you're not getting the play time because of the way the NBA has gone, and then you get your opportunity to match up against some of the few big men out there that are getting play time and not match and go toe-to-toe. If you underperform, then you really just invalid anything and everything you complained about on social media. But these veteran players should know better than this. These veteran players should know by now that you run a social media, you air out your dirty laundry, that all it's going to do is reduce your play time even more, probably going to catch some kind of suspension, probably going to catch some kind of fine. And you do it enough times, you're probably going to find yourself on another team.
Right. And it just has the opposite effect. Interesting from baseball, I usually don't post videos because there's generally not a story associated with them. It just might be a baseball player hitting a home run or whatever. But I did post one on Monday because the Houston Astros unveiled their championship banner. And the interesting thing about this, CJ, is they had the team lined up on the third baseline or the first baseline, whatever, the two teams like they do during the World Series and so forth. And they were looking out to the field, and they unveiled it, but it got stuck. Okay,
I see that.
So they had you saw the two guys climbing the ladder trying to get it was comical because like the players were standing around and chuckling, and these guys were going up and down the ladder trying to make sure that everybody saw that this was the full banner. So that's up there. You can take a look at it, fans. It's rather comical. Also, talk about two different sides of a coin, CJ. This was interesting to me. I mean, the feebleness of fans, the fickleness of fans, however you want to say it. On opening day, a young man by the name of Matt Davidson, not well known to me as a name, to be honest, but then again, I don't follow the Chicago White Sox regularly. But their DH hit three home runs on opening day, and he is only the fourth player to do that, okay? And then today, turn it around. I guess it happened yesterday because the weather was bad and they still play, I guess, tremendously cold because they just had some snow up there. And back in my neck of the woods, as it were, Yankee Stadium, Giancarlo Stanton, who everybody was beside themselves. If the Yankees got Giancarlo Stanton, and he's finally out of Florida. Well, this guy ends up striking out four times yesterday, CJ, and he actually got booed by Yankee fans. Now, this is one game, you know, it's probably cold as, I mean, I'm from New York, so I know. You probably can't feel your fingers in through the batting glove half the time, batting gloves, and he ends up getting booed. Well, today, just to show you, and I would say fickleness, he comes up today and hits it like a three-run homer, and the fans are on his side again. It's crazy, CJ, it really is. And they were making, you know, and this is New York fans, and they were on New York radio, they were making the point about, you know, we talk about Philly fans all the time being nuts, but there's some, you know, and it might be just like 8 or 9 people, but, you know, they're the ones that get the ink. It's crazy. It just... You know, it's game two, people. Relax. You know, come on. You know, it's crazy. You got 162 games, this guy's going to do a heck of a lot more, you know, for your team than strike out three or four times in a game. You know.
It's crazy the lack of loyalty. As fans, you got to ride the high with the inner. When the good is good, the good is good. When the bad is bad, you still got to be there. If every Cleveland Brown fan booed every single time things didn't go our way, it would get horribly booishly loud in Cleveland Stadium. You can't expect a player to have great nights every night. You can't even expect them to always have good nights. They're going to have off nights. You got a player that hits three home runs in one game and follows it up with four, you strikes out three or four times. It is what it is. Take it, you know, the best of, okay, all right, let's look at it as, okay, a home run and two strikeouts one night, two home runs, two strikeouts another. You kind of take the average of that. If this man hit three home runs on the first night and then went weeks or days without and having that kind of performance, I can understand that.
Yep, that's true. The other story related to that, CJ, and this was on a different day, but I took this, and it's a whole story, and it's interesting. It's rather long. It came out of, you know, they call it long-form journalism. I saw a story about, I don't know where it came from, but I got it out of a mixture of newspaper clips. And one of the things I saw was about this person wrote like an essay form of this. The idea is we've always talked about allegiances to teams. You're a Browns fan, regardless of whether they're, you know, they were in the playoffs in the Kosar era, or, you know, you talk about the Browns back a long time, you know, your lifespan, and then, you know, whatever. And this fan, this person was a Cardinal fan, a St. Louis Cardinal fan. And then she married her husband, and her husband was a Cub fan. So she became a Cub fan. And she gets the same thing all the time. How can you switch your allegiance from the St. Louis Cardinals to the Cubs because they're natural rivals? You know, that's two of the teams in the Midwest that are constantly, considered hated rivals. And she switched her allegiance solely because her husband was a Cub fan. And I even don't have ever heard of that. I don't think I've heard of it much at often. And in fact, I remember the years, I think it was 2000, when the Yankees played the Mets in the World Series. And you had a situation where, people in the same family that were married, maybe the man was a Met fan and the woman was a Yankee fan, and they didn't sit on the same couch and they were in the same family. You know, it was crazy, but they were loyal to their team. And this woman wrote this article, and I saw comments at the end. Everybody was like up in arms. How could you possibly switch allegiance, you know, when you're a Card fan to the Cubs? You know, it was like they were like disgusted, you know. But I remembered, you know, I always remember us talking about between myself and you with you know, baseball not so much because, you know, our teams have at least been decent. The Mets, okay, maybe they didn't get to, well, they got to a World Series when they played Kansas City that year. But, and your Indians have been successful by and large lately, but especially football. But, you know, some of the, you know, we don't say, oh, I'm not a Jet fan anymore because they haven't been to the Super Bowl since 1969. You know, you just don't do that as a fan. So this woman took a lot of heat for the article. I thought it was really interesting. CJ, you there?
You got to give me a second, Mike. I got to take care of something real quick.
Okay. Yeah, well, that was the nature of the article. I'll wait for CJ to come back about fans and allegiances to teams. And this woman wrote a long-form article, which is up. I put up on the 110 Nation pages, and you can see that. And I will, you know, I put that up earlier in the week. It's rather interesting about how this woman basically switched her allegiance as a fan. And that's like a no-no, because if you're a fan of a team and she was the type that had all the memorabilia and, you know, jerseys and whatever else, and then basically married her husband, who was a Cub fan, and she immediately became a Cub fan. And people were generally upset with her over that. And I thought it was really interesting in view of the fact that CJ and I have discussed this on occasion on this show, and fans and true fans and what allegiances to your team means. Okay, another story that I put up. We talked about the nature, and I'll bring this up with CJ when he comes back on. We talked about the nature of boxing at this time and how there are only two viable fighters, and the last time these two fighters fought, okay, was on my birthday in last year, September 16th of 2017, and they were scheduled to fight May 5th this year, 2018, and there was basically nobody in between that anybody would be interested in seeing fight, and that was Golovkin and Canelo. And it turns out that Canelo pulled out of the fight, and there's nobody to replace him, and so the fight was just canceled, and there's no further talk about, you know, who would fight or whatever else. And it's just, you know, it's just a sad state of boxing right now, that, you know, when someone went down with an injury or pulled out of a fight for some reason, as long as that was legit, they replaced them. And now there's nobody to replace them. CJ, I just want to mention what we were talking about when you were gone, when you were had to step out there for a second. I mentioned boxing. The Golovkin, whatever his name is, the Russian guy, Golovkin and Canelo fight. Well, Canelo pulls out of that May 5th fight, and boxing is in such a sad state right now that there was nobody to replace him. So they just canceled the fight, and there's no further talk about what they're going to do or who, you know, and, you know, no one knows when the next fight's going to be. It's rather interesting. It's you know, that's the sad state of boxing right now.
It is. And we talked about this, and, you know, obviously the UFC has played a, you know, a big part on it, even with Conor McGregor coming over in that whole Mayweather matchup. You know, as exciting as it was and interesting as it was, it still wasn't enough to rejuvenate the boxing scene. And I don't know what boxing is going to, what they have to do to fix their situation. But that is one sport that, and like I said, a lot of it's got to do with UFC. Most people would rather watch two guys, you know, strategically fight each other using all types and different forms of fighting types, what I'm looking for, versus just watching two guys just simply box it out. You know, the different fighting styles, the submission holds, the taekwondo, the jiu-jitsu, all that other, you know, all that different styles of fighting all in one in an octagon is much more entertaining than watching two guys duke it out. And I don't – we're right past the days of Holyfield and Foreman and Tyson and Sugar Ray Leonard and – now Mayweather and Pacquiao, and boxing, it's gone in a different direction. The interest in this younger generation is much different than what it was when we were growing up. So, boxing's got its hands full.
Right. I don't know, CJ. We have someone in the studio. I don't know if it's one of our two guests. I don't recognize the number, but do you have the board in front of you?
Let's go ahead and let's give this a shot. It's backfired us before, so I hate when numbers pop up and press one to get in the studio and not match numbers that's been handed passed down to us. So I'm gonna be I got it pulled up on my phone, so we'll give this a shot, see how this goes. Thanks. There we go. Thanks for calling in. Are you one of our guests for tonight, or are you just calling in?
No. This is LeBron James. I just wanted to tell y'all that the lawyers are going to handle it, man. I needed to tell y'all that y'all copyright infringing on top of Shop Talk. You know, we can't be having that. I'm trying to win. I'm trying to win a number three championship.
I thought that number looked familiar. I know that Eric would look familiar. What's up, Chris?
Okay. Oh, this is LeBron James. I was just giving y'all I just wanted to tell y'all copyright infringement what do y'all think about that? I mean, seriously, it's, you know, I'm right next door to the home state of Alabama. Of course, that's where I'm from. What's your take on LeBron James's recent outlash to not only Alabama, University of Alabama, but now he's taking personal shots at none other than Coach God. I mean, Saban.
Get him, LeBron. Get him. That's all I got to say. being a Buckeye fan, I agree with. I was listening when I first heard this story. I was listening to Speaker Mind, or Speak for Yourself, whatever it is, on Fox Sports One. I was listening to it on my way back from Florida last night, and just like they said, you know, regardless if it's the exact same thing, if you take enough of a likeness, then yes, even they would pursue and be on the phone with their lawyers. There are so many things that you can do that doesn't put you in that gray area. There's no doubt that Nick Saban and those at Alabama know what they're doing. And if you're willing to play with fire with what is the best basketball player of our generation at current time, I'm not going to say all time, and probably the most influential athlete in any sport, if you're willing to play fire and get that close, then if you get burnt, you get burnt.
Okay. But since when was a player bigger than the university? Or since when was a coach of who knows how to win championships? may I remind you, on the scale of championships, Nick Saban's only lost one. So, who's the bigger guy here? And, the barber
who
shop.
Whose brand do you think, honestly, is bigger? LeBron James's brand or Nick Saban's brand? Because I don't think Nick Saban has a lifetime deal with Nike. I don't think that Nick Saban has a lot of these and is influential. Pretty much LeBron says something. That's what happens in the NBA. He said we need to change the All-Star. The All-Star changed. I'm not saying that Nick Saban is not a very important person in the college world or a very influential person, but I don't think that if you put those two on a scale, I'd be willing to bet that scale is going to tip in favor of LeBron when you talk about who's more influential when it comes to overall in the sports world.
Influential and copyright are two different, and trademark infringement are two very different things. And not to make serious of it, but in all reality, there's no way that you can trademark a barbershop talk, okay? So literally, this is a way to make the brand bigger. Saban is battling another brand, which I believe, James is battling another brand. He said himself, LeBron James said, look, I don't know the coach, but I kind of figured that's what he would say. And, Saban stood up there in his press conference. And, of course, it was the last thing that was mentioned in question because Saban left after that. He's not too worried about big old LeBron James. But I do find it to be cautious that if this goes further into a court proceeding, at what point in time does it become an issue, like, with smaller affiliates? Because there's always a sequel to something. There's always an off-branch. Man, I mean, you look at all the shows, The Voice. Isn't that the same thing as America's Got Talent? Isn't that the same thing as American Idol? Mm-hmm. They're all, so I have a feeling that this won't hold up in court, and I also have a feeling that this is just a way to build the brand bigger. LeBron is a smart man. I know that he's a great businessman, and he's modeling himself to be a world leader brand throughout, even after his career. So I don't know why he would stab at little old Coach Saban down there in Alabama, but I don't think it sits too well with us Alabama fans knowing that somebody from Ohio is poking at the bear.
Like I said earlier, I wonder if that being an Ohio State faithful has anything to do with the little rivalry that's going on with this old podcast stuff.
Well, you guarantee if we could meet Urban Meyer on any field, in any place, at any time, we would roll tide roll. And y'all have a good night tonight, and keep those topics going, guys. We love what you do.
Yes, sir. You have a good one.
All right, bud.
I thought that was his area code, but I
bad.
So speaking about the topic you were talking about before I walked out, talking about fans basically switching allegiance, alliances, whatever, with the team. I guess I'm a different person because there's no converting. For me, anyway. One, I'm not going to date a Michigan fan. I'm not going to date an Alabama fan. I'm not going to date a Steelers fan. I'm not going to date a Cincinnati fan, a Ravens fan. And there's no converting. If I date somebody or marry somebody that is a fan of another team, it's either you're jumping on board of my team, or we're sitting in two different parts of the house on Sunday and watching two different games because there's no converting. I'm not going to, oh baby, you're an Eagles fan, so I'm going to cheer. No, I'm not going to jump. I've said this many, many times. I only have one team. There are 31 other teams that I do not like, that I actually hate. Some I hate more than others. But I'm not one of these fans that, okay, on Monday I'm going to wear a Patriots jersey because I'm a Patriots fan as well. And on Tuesday I'm going to wear a Chiefs jersey because I'm a Chiefs fan as well, and so forth. And I've had employees that good Lord, it seemed like he had enough jerseys for every day of the month, and he was a fan of everybody. I am not that person. I'm a Cleveland Browns fan. I'm a Cleveland Indians fan. I'm a Cleveland Cavaliers fan. I am a Columbus Blue Jackets fan. I'm an Ohio State Buckeye fan. There's a couple other Ohio State teams that I may cheer for, but when it comes down to it, I am an Ohio State fan. And there's no converting that. There's no, okay, we're married. That's just like those people that have those signs, those license plate that says this house is divided and it has two different teams. No, my vehicle, there's only going to be one plate on it. It's going to be my team. If it's my vehicle, there's no house divided anything. And part of it is it reduces arguments. I'm not going to spend my Saturdays and Sundays arguing with somebody about their team. And you know, I've had friends and I've hung out and I'm not going to say date, but I've hung out with people on the intentions that maybe it would go somewhere. And then be UNC fans or then be do, and it just, no, I'm, I can't do it. I can't play nice. I've had friends actually unfriend me on Facebook because I'm not nice when we talk about sports. Sports is one of the most important things in my life. And sports, and even this company, I mean, it was a rough and shaky and a long 13-year relationship, but ultimately sports is what ended up ending my relationship with my ex after 13 years. I mean, we're best friends, and we're great now, and she still has no interest in sports at all. But, you know, nothing but sports in my life is ultimately that's where she found interest in someone else and went in a different direction. There's no changing alliances for me. There's no converting me over, and I don't even. And there's some fan bases. No, there's no chance that we could ever even be, regardless if she stayed voting, you know, cheering for her team, and me cheering for my team. There's certain fan bases. No, like I will never date a Michigan Wolverine fan. It just won't happen. That is too much of a rivalry. That is too much of hatred between those two teams that it would never happen. And Pittsburgh Steelers fan, no, I would never date a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. That is one of those teams that the rivalry between my Cleveland Browns and the Steelers is too much that twice a year that would be an ugly scene. It just wouldn't happen. There's teams out there, though, that, okay, if you want to be a fan of, that's great. But, don't expect me to cheer your team on or hope for your team. You know, the only time that I'm going to cheer for your team or hope they win is if I need them to win a football pool, or I pick them in a football pool. But outside of that, no, I'm not going to cheer for your team. I'm not going to watch your team. I'm going to watch, if it's the only game on, maybe. But, if I got the NFL ticket or something and there's more interesting games on to me, then you're going to be sitting in the other room watching the game by yourself. I have other interest. I have other things going on, and that is like racing. I don't think I could ever date a Dale Jr. fan. Like, I just don't think that I can do it. I couldn't date someone that thinks of Jr. as almost a god, that has been this most popular driver for God knows how long and has never really accomplished anything to validate that. And I know growing up, I definitely couldn't date a senior fan. I have a lot of respect for senior. And, it sucks that he left the sport before it was that time. But I did not like senior at all. And I did not affiliate with senior fans. I could not date a senior fan. And that's just the way I couldn't, Alabama. There's no way. I don't know if I could even date anybody that's a fan of anybody in the SEC, period. But definitely Alabama. There's no converting for me. Like, it just would never happen.
Right, me either. And the funny thing is, CJ, and I get it all the time, coming from New York, obviously, living in New York, growing up in New York and becoming a fan, I told the story many times of how I got to be a fan of the Mets and the Jets versus the Yankees and the Giants, and that was because of their different stadiums. When I grew up, being disabled, I'm in a wheelchair, obviously. And, well, you know that, and some of the fans that listen regularly know that. But Shea Stadium, which was the stadium that was there when I grew up, had ramps up to the field level. And Yankee Stadium, the old Yankee Stadium, had steps, and gigantic steps, like up a mountainside almost, that kind of steepness. And my father could not obviously have to carry me up a flight of stairs that were gigantic and everything. So we stayed away from that stadium because it was basically wheelchair inaccessible. And, you know, that's how I ended up picking my teams more or less by necessity. And, you know, and they said, well, you'll become a Giant fan. I'm like, no, I won't, you know. And how can you live in New York and not be a Giant fan at the time? Well, you know, I had my reasons, and, you know, they were legitimate to me. And even now, yes, I watch a Giant game on TV. And, yes, if they're nowhere near, if they're not playing each other, I root for the Giants. I have nothing against them, you know. But I don't want to see them beat my Jets, you know. And, you know, it depends what happens. Like, I remember, like I said, there was the stories that came out, I believe it was the year 2000 when the Mets played the Yankees in the World Series. Because I can remember one of the major events of that series was Roger Clemens hitting Mike Piazza with a pitch. And I think it was 2000, because 2001 was the Yankees and the Diamondbacks, because that was the year of 9/11. But I think it was 2000 that the Mets played the Yankees in the World Series, and that occurred. And all throughout that series and all the lead-up to that series, you read about the houses, like you talked about, CJ, houses divided, like the wives were Yankee fans, and the husbands were Met fans, and they didn't even, like, sleep together during the series, or they didn't sit on the same couch. They sat on different couches in the living room to watch the game and different things like that. Or if the husband, I remember stories that came out, the husband watched the game in the den and the wife watched in the, you know, in the bedroom or something, you know, but crazy. But no one switched their allegiances. And then you read the article that I put up, I guess it was Monday, about this lady who married, who was a Cardinal fan basically her whole life, and the Cardinals and the Cubs in the Midwest are known as natural rivals, and she married her husband who's a Cub fan and becomes a Cub fan. And even the article to this day, when it appeared this week, when I put it up, people were commenting like, I don't believe this. You know, it was crazy. It was absolutely, you know, and that, like you said, that's not the definition to us anyway. And we're two guys that, you know, co-host the show, host and co-host. That sports is not fandom. That's not a fan. A fan is sticking with the team you root for, and regardless of what their record is and what their history is.
You know, I remember seeing a story once where an Ohio State fan and a Michigan fan, they got married, I think, at the Horseshoe at Ohio State. And I could only shake my head. You know, obviously they didn't, you know, there was no converting or changing alliances. But to see one of the biggest rivalries in all of college football, to watch a fan, you know, I've heard family members talk about, you know, being in, you know, from Michigan but being an Ohio State fan, or being from Ohio and being a Michigan fan, and the friction it causes, and, you know, how it can get ugly. I couldn't even possibly imagine even trying to put my loyalty to my team to the side and even attempt to be in a serious relationship or marriage with somebody that is hoping that my biggest rivalry, my biggest enemy in all of college football beats my team. Like, I could not sit there. I mean, right now it would be easy. I mean, Ohio State has had Michigan's number for so long. Eventually that tide is going to turn. Eventually Michigan is going to swing back in the other direction and is going to go a different way. But I couldn't, there's no way.
Right. No, I believe me, if it was so easy to switch allegiances, I don't think we would have stuck with our respective football teams. I mean, it takes something out of you every year. And I can say that I identify with you when it comes to the Browns, because you at least had, the Kosar era. Now, granted, that was a long time ago, but also you got to take into account that the Jets haven't been in any really serious playoff position since the '69 Super Bowl. So both of our teams are in an extended slump, and if it was that easy to switch a lot allegiances, I think we both would have done so long ago.
I mean, it's like at this point, because LeBron playing for Miami, I will never cheer for Miami. I mean, if it came down to them and Golden State, yeah, I'd probably cheer Miami on to beat Golden State. But and that's because of the rivalry that is built up between Golden State and Cleveland at this point. But because of LeBron's move and what he did, I'll never be able to – not that I ever did, but – I would never be able to cheer on Miami.
Right. Right, exactly. And, just because he was there, it doesn't mean you have to cheer for them either. Yeah. I know. Like you say, we grew up, in a different time and what fandom meant. And I think back to this too, CJ. When we grew up, there wasn't so much of the memorabilia stuff, like it was just becoming, just coming into popularity, I guess. You didn't see, I guess in high school I started to see. I told a story a while back on the show. We were discussing football teams. And not necessarily because I used to see in my high school guys wearing Steeler and Raider jackets all the time. And I said, well, how could you live in New York and be a Steeler or a Raider fan? Your teams are, I'm not sure how far away Pittsburgh is from New York miles-wise, but so the Oakland being like 3,000 miles away. And they told me, well, I never really followed the Jets and everything. Well, those people weren't old enough. They weren't. I was a senior and they were a freshman maybe. There was like 4 years between us. They hadn't followed the Jets in the Super Bowl. So they really had no idea that the Jets were ever in a playoff, ever in contention for a playoff, let alone a Super Bowl. And, so that's a little bit of a different story because both teams had were in bad streaks. This is even before LT came on and the Giants were good in the Parcells era. So, this is even before that. So I could see where maybe they didn't follow New York teams, even being in New York, even living in New York. But, it's a funny thing. Now, like you say, with all the jerseys being available basically online, you can go to any team's, any team's website has a store and you can buy any amount of items. So, that's – and with cable especially, you can be a fan of anybody, but – the idea of switching, I don't get that.
Yeah, me neither. What else we got, Mike, to jump into?
One other story of interest. This was interesting because immediately after he retired, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar wrote a lot of books that were basically relating to social issues and racial issues and whatever else. Well, turns out, I didn't even know this. I put it up Monday when I saw it. He has a new book out, CJ, on what motivated him. And there's been a lot of, not recently, but there's been a lot of talk in the past about what made, you know, Kareem similar to Muhammad Ali, Cassius Clay to Cassius Clay to Muhammad Ali, and you know, Kareem from Lou Alcindor and growing up in New York, and to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and what made him do this. And well, he wrote a whole book now, the new book, and the title escapes me, but I put it up on the 110 page. You can see it. It's a mock drawing of the cover. Basically about his journey from being a athlete, or, you know, obviously UCLA and the NBA, to being a political activist. So seems like an interesting book from what I read about it.
Definitely make sure I got to check that out. It's interesting to have an opportunity to kind of read the path of some of these great athletes and what they had, the adversity they had to overcome to not only play their sport but become one of the greats in their respectful sport.
Yeah, and, you know, it's so much, you know, like people say that athletes nowadays don't get involved in certain things, or maybe even with social media, you don't hear about it. But back in the day, the two people you heard a lot about were Lou Alcindor and Muhammad Ali. Basically, well, more Muhammad Ali in terms of being a professional boxer, but he started out in the Olympics as well and worked his way up. But more, they got almost equal publicity at the time for their social activism, political activism, with almost hand in hand with Muhammad Ali's boxing career. Was the fact that he, he dodged the draft at that time, saying that he didn't want to, you know, he made all kinds of lines which escape me right now about, you know, I'm not against the Viet Cong or whatever that was, but he got an equal amount of publicity for the fact that he didn't go into the army or wasn't drafted or evaded the draft, then almost as much as equally as his boxing career. And so, you know, these guys are interesting men, even when they were alive in that allegiance. And to this day, especially with the state of boxing, I think anybody would be interested in, you know, reading about Muhammad Ali that didn't have the pleasure like we did, or like I did at least. I don't know how much of Ali's career you saw, but, you know, from the 70s on, I watched Muhammad Ali pretty regularly and it went from basically Ali to Sugar Ray Leonard and then to Tyson. So I didn't see Sugar Ray Robinson regularly. He was a little before my time. But once Ali hit, I saw him. I saw Sugar Ray Leonard, and I saw Tyson were the three main guys that I saw before boxing. Well, Floyd Mayweather, but okay. but before that box started to decline, those were the three guys that were, you know, that were boxing, and you had Larry Holmes at the time. You had more boxers that were in front of TV cameras, and like we said on occasion, even on this show, with the fight that was just canceled, boxing has gone down, and like you say, a big factor of that was the MMA.
Yeah, I didn't get an opportunity to watch Muhammad Ali. I caught some old film, but I didn't start entering the boxing scene until the latter part of Sugar Ray's career, and really when Tyson was blowing up and he was on his climb to the top is kind of when I entered the boxing scene and started watching it.
Yeah, and the interesting thing with Ali, he is probably one of the only boxers that basically tied to one broadcaster. And it was a well-known fact that wherever Muhammad Ali boxed and whenever he boxed, he made sure it was on ABC because he was so identified with Floyd Cosell at the time. I don't know how much of this in terms of the history you've read, but there was a show, for those of you that are unfamiliar and didn't come from my era, called Library of Sports, and that was on ABC. And Howard Cosell was like a top radio and sports caster on, you know, ABC network at the time, and he basically followed, and they made jokes about him following, you know, being on Muhammad Ali's apron strings, because wherever one fought, the other one did the bout, you know, and broadcasted the bout, and they were, there was only that at that time, there was only him that got, you know, emotionally tied to Howard Cosell, and they had a lot of back and forth, and you know, most of his interviews with Cosell as far as television. So that was the only boxer that I could think of that literally was associated with one media member.
Something new every night there, Mike.
Huh?
Said I learn something new every night.
There you go. There you go. I try.
Have we hit all the topics that we was going to get into tonight?
We basically hit them all. We went from Monday to Wednesday, and that's what we're going to do.
All right, kind of got things a little bit done early. I don't know what happened to both of our guests, and I do apologize to the fans that tuned in, and we were supposed to have a couple guests join us tonight. So
we got LeBron James anyway. That was a
first. yeah, since I'm still stuck here at work and ain't going to be until midnight, and we've covered everything, and somehow our guests become MIA. How about we go ahead and let them know what you got going on Friday, where you can be found, likes, and all the whatnots, and that way hopefully I can get everything accomplished tonight and get home at a decent time.
Okay. It looks like we're going to have Dick Ayers, the photographer from Stafford Speedway, because the reason I say that is I happened to look at my phone while I was discussing the stories with CJ, and I saw that the gentleman called me and left me a message, so I will definitely call him back, and we should have him on Friday, along with hopefully Tom Bowles, one of the competitors of the SK division, modified division, who is another one of those racers that stand to benefit in just a couple of weeks' time, starting with the Spring Sizzler, stand to benefit by Kevin Harvick's generosity with the contribution to the money that's already there in terms of the purchase the purses to week. Excuse me, I'll fix my tongue a moment. The week to week purses for the Stafford racers. So we'll definitely talk to those two gentlemen about that, and I will get back to Dick Ayers as soon as I get off the show. So we should have at least him on Friday night and one of the competitors. So you people from the Stafford area, tune in Friday night. This will be your show. You can reach me on my personal Facebook page, the Hot Laps with Stats pages, the 110 Nation pages, the website, and my Twitter account, which is at Stats108.
I want to thank all of our guests this week. We've had a pretty busy week, so I want to thank all of those, all five of them, plus Izzo joining us, so thankful for that. I want to thank the listeners for tuning in. Of course, Miss Lee for everything she's doing behind the scenes to make all this possible. We got a couple big shows planned for you guys next week, so looking forward to that. Miss Lee has been working hard on putting some shows together in some different formats and stuff, so we're looking forward to that next week. Of course, got to thank Mike for running the studio the last two nights and, of course, being there for me. And of course, Chris for calling in. And make sure you guys tune in tomorrow night to Race Chat Live with Chris and Craig, 8 o'clock. You guys don't want to miss that. Got a couple of great guests lined up for you guys tonight. It's always a fun time, always a great laugh. So make sure you guys tune in to that as well. And of course, Mike's Hot Laps with Stats, Friday night, 8 o'clock. Don't miss it. Us, Mike and myself with the 110 Nation Sports Show will be back Monday night, 8 o'clock. Looking forward to that. Don't forget to give us a follow on Twitter at 110 Nation. Give us a like on Facebook, 110 Nation Sports. Also, check out the site, www.the110nationsports.com, for all the latest going on here at the 110 Nation. I got to make sure that I thank Fit for Life, the I-95 Sports Network, and Mile High Radio. Without these marketing partners and networks, we wouldn't be able to do what we do and grow the way we grow. So I want to make sure that I thank each and every last one of them. Tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, right here, the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network, Race Chat Live with Chris and Craig. Make sure you guys tune in. Till then.
And a guest host, LeBron.
Oh, come on.
Thanks for listening to the 110 Nation Sports Show with Mr. CJ Sports. You are a part of the 110 Nation, so be sure to visit the 110nation.com for everything related to the show. You can follow CJ on Twitter at 110 Nation and on Facebook at 110 Nation Sports. Until next time.